Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Block Talk, where we talk about everything related to blockchain, Azure, and Microsoft all up. My name is Ziad Rajabi, and today we've got a couple of new hosts here. We're going to talk about new updates to Azure Blockchain Workbench and a couple of things that you guys can expect in the upcoming version. Do you want to introduce yourselves?
Yeah. My name is Brenda, and I'm a PM on the Azure Blockchain team, and we're happy to talk to you about Azure Blockchain Workbench today.
Hi, my name is Kay, and I am an engineer on the Azure Blockchain team.
Great. So Brenda, why don't you talk to us about what we can expect from the latest version of Azure Blockchain Workbench?
Awesome. So for those of you who haven't worked with Workbench before, basically it's a great tool to help you get started building blockchain applications. And the goal basically is to set up a lot of scaffolding for you so you don't have to worry about that and you can focus directly on your smart contracts and your business logic. So some of the newest things that we've added are basically around the developer experience. So we know that some of you guys that have been working on it have given us feedback around how, you know, it's a great tool, but sometimes it's difficult to do troubleshooting and versioning and things like that. So with 1.6, we've added some great new features, and we'll walk through some of them today. And so the first one we'll talk about is the troubleshooting experience, which will give you a lot more detailed error messages, as well as a way to actually trace the requests that you're putting in through Workbench and where the failures might have been. So Kay will actually go ahead and show you guys a demo of how you can do that in Workbench.
Okay, so consider a scenario where you're a smart contract developer and you wrote a smart contract. You've been submitting contracts, but all of a sudden, you get this error message. The action failed, please check your input and code and try again. In these new releases of Workbench, we include a request ID, which you can use to troubleshoot this. We now have a new tool, which is self-service, where you can use this ID and look for logs, and you can try to see what had happened. So in this scenario, I was creating a bunch of contracts and suddenly this error popped up. It says learn more. If you go here, we actually take you to the GitHub page where we explain how this troubleshooting tool works, some of the common questions, actual steps to how to get to the tool and how to use it. But for the purposes of this block talk, I'll show you exactly how to get there. So first, you want to go to your resource group on Azure Portal. And if you look at all your resources, you can go to Application Insights. Before, you might have had to go to search and type in your request ID. Now we have an easy way to view all your logs by going to Workbooks. If you go to Workbooks, you'll see a bunch of pre-canned templates for you to analyze. These are made by the Azure Workbooks team. There's one for us for Azure Blockchain Workbench, called Workbench Troubleshooting. Now, this tells you all the things that you can look at, such as logs, potential issues, what might be happening. Here, there's an area, a parameter for request ID. So now you go back to your Workbench and you can copy the request ID. So if you enter your request ID here, now Application Insights will spit out a log for you and you can see exactly what happened. So this is in chronological order where the latest action is at the top. So you can see it started from all the way from the API to some of these transaction events. In the middle, you can see that there's an error, and it says 300 could not be parsed into uint8. Parameter length exceeded the maximum number of bits for the field. Now, what this means is that in my Solidity contract, I had specified a parameter for uint8, but for some reason, I had supplied a value of 300. As you can see, all the other prices, all the other values that I've submitted were in the low single digits or double digits, but suddenly I submitted something that was too big. And for context, UN8, the maximum number is 255, so anything below that would have worked. As you can see here, the parameter is UN8. the fix for here would be to change this to something bigger, like uint256, or you can just apply a smaller parameter. And that's how you use the workbench for troubleshooting.
So a couple of things to just ask about this particular stuff. So the first question I have is how do customers understand sort of how to debug and how to actually figure out where the issue is in App Insights?
Yeah, so usually when there is an error, you'll see that the log level has a tag called error. And in this case, it was that it could not be parsed into uint8. Obviously, there could be way more things that could happen. So we have summarized a bunch of the common errors that customers may see at the end of this troubleshooting guide, which, as explained before, can be accessed from Learn More. So for example, these are the common errors you can see. For example, you can see error while estimating gas. That could mean that there was a revert or an assert in the code. It is hard for us to visualize exactly which point it went wrong, but this at least gives an idea to the customers about potentially what might have gone wrong with their contract. It gives them a starting point of how to fix it.
So I think one of the nice things about this update is in previous versions, we just got a generic error. Mm-hmm. It was something like, please contact your system administrator, your administrator, workbench administrator to address the issue.
Yeah.
Which, in a lot of cases, you already are the administrator, so you're like, why should I contact myself? What's nice now is we actually have several different types of errors depending on what's going on.
Yeah.
Could you elaborate a little more on the types of errors that you can see? You showed the one, obviously, in Workbench today, which is showing you that sort of that request ID.
Mm-hmm.
What other errors can I expect?
Okay, yeah, so this says the action failed. Please check your input or coding, try again. Other errors could be, this is taking a while. Please come back and check. And in all of these cases, we show a request ID,
mm-hmm.
so you can track exactly what's going on. The difference between the action failed and the action is taking too long is that the action failed is generally something wrong with the user's code. Some logic error or the state had gone out of sync. But when it says the action is taking a long time, it generally is a transient issue with the blockchain. So it might be some part of the system might be taking too long or the network might be congested. A third error could be that action had submitted with no events. That error is usually seen when a user had written a contract without a corresponding event to transmit.
Without using Workbench base, basically.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, very cool. I'm excited about the App Insights stuff, mainly because I think this is one of those areas where it's one of those hidden features, I would say, of Workbench where, you know, people want to debug, and debugging on blockchain is very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to make it as easy as possible by sort of aggregating a bunch of logs across the system. And with this new Workbench notebook or workbook, it's much easier to go and find those and sort of aggregate all the errors that potentially could be the issue.
Yeah, that's right. It also gives a user kind of an idea of what's going on in the system.
Mm-hmm.
So you can follow the steps. Oh, it started with the API, and now there's something called the ETH transaction submitter, and there's a watcher. So it gives the customer an idea of how we're going about solving the issue.
Very cool. Cool. So Brandon, why don't you walk us through the next cool update?
Yeah, awesome. So as you noticed, there was an error in Kay's code, and so he made some changes to it. And so with previous versions of Workbench, you might notice that, hey, I want to upload a new version of my contract with a bug fix, or you know, maybe I had some logic updates in my smart contract. But essentially, it would be very hard because you'd have to basically rename a lot of the things in your smart contract before mm-hmm. you could upload it. And so with Workbench 1.6, one of the great new features that we've added is basically application versioning support. So essentially now, when you have an update, or you want to basically upload a new version of your smart contract application, you can basically go and upload a new version without having to go through all the, you know, renaming, go through all the user role assignments again. And so, you know, it will make the development experience a lot easier, especially if you're doing iterations of your smart contract and mm-hmm. going through that development experience.
That's right. We've talked to many customers who have literally over 100 versions of their apps. Mm-hmm. And so with previous versions of Workbench, you just get a whole list of tiles.
Yeah.
And just represent all those versions. And so, okay, show us this cool stuff that we have now.
Yeah, sure. So let's go back to the Solidity contract that we were talking about. So earlier I explained that the issue could have been that the parameter was UINT8, and that could have been mitigated by making the parameter UINT256. So let's say I am a developer and I want to iterate on this and upload a new version of this contract. So I'm just going to save this, go back to my Workbench, and say, okay, so I have ACID transfer. I just made changes to my code. I want to upload a new version. So before, when you were uploading applications, you would have gone to new, and that would have uploaded a completely new application. Now you can add a version to an existing application. So you would say add version. Let me find my file here. Upload the contract config. Upload the new contract code that I just made. And click add version. Now you'll notice that there's a warning here that says that previous versions will convert to read-only, and you can individually re-enable past versions. And we'll come back to how you can re-enable past versions as well. So you can see here that ACID transfer version 3.0 was deployed. The one thing that I want to point out is that between version 2 and version 3, the role assignments have been transferred over. And as you might have seen in the warnings, this will happen if no changes have been made to the role assignments. But if some of the role assignments have changed, then we obviously won't port them over. So this version of ACID transfer now has UINT256 as a parameter. So if I say expensive apple at $300, I can create a new contract, and this should complete fine. So that is how you iterate on applications with versioning.
Very cool. Can you show what it looks like for accessing older versions and enabling, disabling older versions?
Yeah. So as an admin of Workbench, you can click on versions, which will show all versions of that application. So as you can see, I have three different versions. At any time, I can enable, disable any of them. I can always view old versions. For example, let's say I just had version 2. I want to go see the contracts that I had. Here are the list of contracts that I made for this version. I can view them. I can look at all the information that was in there. But because it's read-only, or it's default to read-only, I can't take any actions on these.
Yep. However, if you want to actually go and do some actions on previous versions, you mm-hmm. can re-enable any of those versions in
yeah.
the past.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about another scenario. So we've just been talking about a developer scenario where mm-hmm. one might have found a bug and they want to fix it and they want to iterate. In those scenarios, generally, we found that most customers don't care about the old versions and they want to just keep the latest one, which is why we default to the latest one being enabled. However, let's suppose a more production-oriented scenario where they might want to try a new version of a contract for a set group of people, mm-hmm. but not everyone. So they want to keep the old version as it is, but they might want to create a new version of the contract with a different group of people. So let me show you how that might work. So suppose that in this scenario, we have four different roles, four different members. Suppose that with a new regulation, we want to add a new role that can audit every contract and every action. So we want a new role that says that's named auditor, for example. Now in this case, like we just did, we can add a new version. We can add the new config with the new role assignment. upload a new version. If you go back to this new version 4.0, you can see that, again, all four of the roles have been transferred over because I didn't change any of them. But now, you can create a new role called auditor. So let's add a user as an auditor. It logged me out.
So for the editor, go back or pause, pause yourself.
Okay. Go. Okay, go. So I've just added a new role called auditor. But like I said, all the past versions have been disabled. As an admin, in this scenario, I want both to be enabled. So I would say, okay, I'll go to versions here, and then just click enabled. Now, as you can see in this main page, you can see both version 4 and version 3 of asset transfer, where you can act on either one of them. So for example, I can go back to version 3. It'll tell you that it's an older version, it's not the latest one, but you can still create new contracts, you can act on existing ones. Okay, so let's say that in this case, in version 3, this test user was a buyer. As an admin, I say, okay, I don't want this person to have access to this one anymore. I just want Kay, Brenda, and Zayed to act on this version. If you go to the actual user, you should be able to see only version 4 because that's what the admin had assigned to you. So this way, you can, as an admin, you can enable multiple versions and act on them, but you can also have access control and only give access to people that you want to allow seeing the application.
Very cool. Thanks, Kay. All right, Brenda. So we have one more update.
Yes, we have one more update that we would like to share with everyone. So for those of you who have been using Workbench, you know that we have a REST API if you want to build, you know, your custom UI and things like that. But we also have a messaging API that not that many people know about, and we've actually done a complete redesign of the ingress and egress messaging APIs. And so just to talk quickly about why you would use these APIs, basically, you know, if you want to do things like system-to-system integration, or you want to basically initiate actions such as, you know, creating a smart contract or doing some user assignments directly with Workbench, you can use the messaging API. And so with the egress messaging, you can also do things like, you know, basically a lot of the events that happen on Workbench will get published to the Azure Event Grid. And that also you can access through your blockchain Workbench resource group. So once you access it, you can basically go and do things like connect downstream consumers. So if you want to, you know, send email notifications or take some sort of action based on things that have happened on the blockchain, you can do that as well. And so we don't have a demo for that today, but essentially you can go to the Workbench documentation and look up, hey, what does the new schema look like and how can I interact with it, you know, as I'm building out my blockchain apps.
Yeah, just to elaborate a couple more thoughts on that particular note, one of the main reasons why you want to use the messaging API over the REST API, REST API is basically user-centric. It requires authentication through AAD, whereas the messaging API, you basically give, there's no authentication per se, but you give access via the connection string.
Right.
That's how you get access to it. In either case, you can use the REST API or the messaging API to ingest transaction information, so to push transactions. In fact, our entire web app is built on top of the REST API. And for the egress aspect, for the messages coming out, going to Event Grid or to Service Bus, you can do special things like maybe request a SMS message notification or connect directly to Dynamics. In fact, one of the parts of Azure Blockchain Workbench is a synchronized SQL database that represents the data on the blockchain. And the way that we do that is by using that egress message system.
Yes.
Great. Well, thank you guys so much for watching. And if you're interested in seeing more videos and seeing future videos, please do follow us at hashtag MSFT blockchain, or follow us through Channel 9 or in the videos. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.